Thank you, Rabbi.
How much time do I have, Rabbi?
Despite the fact that there's not many of you out there, I feel that if one of you takes part of this program home and begins to develop it, it will affect many, many people.
This doesn't have to be taken.
I'm very hopeful. I think we all are hopeful that some of this will come out in the form of your communities. Much of the talk has been, and very well done, about the needs of the children and families of the children that have disabilities. And I just want to talk to you about the effect that this program has on people that don't have disabilities. Because a true inclusion program means that everybody is affected. Every person that has contact with this should be affected. And I think that I was thinking about why is it that people have some difficulties with disabilities, and I was talking to Shuli in the ride over here, and I think it has to do with the fact that it's just the way we're wired. I think that people, human beings, look for symmetry. They look for symmetry in terms of looks. They look for symmetry in terms of psychological functioning. They look for symmetry in terms of the way a person's physique is, and that when that symmetry is not seen, the initial reaction is to try and figure out, well, why is that, and to pull back. I had an experience recently where I was walking my family down the boardwalk, and walking towards us was really one of the most grotesque human beings I'd ever seen. His face was totally asymmetrical. He had an eye patch on. Part of his face was skewed. I have no idea what this man had. And I work with a lot of disabled people, and my first reaction was like, oh my God, you know, it's like I pulled back. And then I started thinking, well, you know, what about this person? It was a beautiful day. He was out there walking with his wife, just like I was. He had every right to be out there. And I also thought, what incredible courage this person had, because as we were walking, you could hear other people talking about, did you see that person? Did you see what he looked like? And I think that that's part of the problem, that when people see people that are asymmetrical in some way, what they do is they tend to pull back. And what they really miss is the true symmetry of the whole gestalt, the whole person, which is the inner part. And Shuli helped me out with this in the car. That to see the person's neshama is really the reciprocal part, that if you don't get past that asymmetric outside, then you're not going to get to you're not going to connect up with the inner person. And I think that that's what inclusion does, is that it combats that initial reaction for us to pull back. As Mark and everybody has said, what happens with kids that do have disabilities is they really are taken out of circulation. They're placed in other schools here and there, whether it's public schools or special ed schools. I used to be the director of the YES program, and there was a lot of kids there that were taken out of circulation from their community. And what that leaves is somewhat of a homogeneous group, you know, to some extent, in the general community. And I think that that robs people of the opportunity to really interact with people who are different, who see the world different, who physically perceive the world different. And I think that that's a real shame. And I think that our program is really combating that. I think the other part of an inclusion program is that it teaches moral intelligence, meaning that we have the ability then... moral intelligence needs to be taught, but it needs to be shown. The adults in schools, our parents, the adults around us, really are the ones that teach moral intelligence. And that's how kids learn that. They don't learn it by looking at a book. They don't learn it by reading a story. They don't learn it by watching a movie. What they do is they watch the adults around them. And if you think about yourselves and why maybe perhaps you went into this profession, it might have been because a relative or somebody that you saw you know, had this quality of moral intelligence and you followed in their footsteps. This program teaches that, because kids really learn how to get out of themselves and how to begin to care about other people. And it's a very important lesson, and I'm hoping that all of these 150 or 200 kids that are coming into our programs, you know, may be the future, you know, therapists and OTs and doctors, and if nothing else, at least they will be good parents and leaders in their community. And that, to me, is worth a lot. The other thing is that I think that programs such as ours, or any program like it, gives, not everybody can be a Torah scholar, not everybody can be popular, not everybody can be an athlete. But people need a place to identify with. And I think that a lot of the kids that we have there aren't necessarily those kids, but they're kids that need to do something. They need to do good. And if they and they have a place to do that with a program like this. And I think that that's very important, because those kids then become the recognized for their goodness. And I think that's a very wonderful thing. As Mark said, we're a people of proximity. And I'd like to just bring you a little bit closer to this whole issue of disabilities. I just want to ask you, how many of you know somebody that has a disability of any sort? Yeah, tell me about the person you know.
Children or adults?
Doesn't matter.
We have to have enough work as a children's show. Mm-hmm. Deal with them as best we can. And parents and children as well.
Yeah.
I try to interact in the very rudimentary, unsophisticated way that I have.
Yeah, tell me about one of those kids that interests you. Do you know? Can you describe one?
Very playful, very active.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to communicate verbally with them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you find them playful and active and sort of fun. Yeah.
I want to speak about an adult. Actually, my community is very few people, elderly, it's the Bronx, my community. But there's an individual that I was told about by one of the people who did come to my congregation that he just lost his mother. There's a question of he's coming to synagogue. Actually, I was asked to say cottage for the mother, but I said I'm not the young man who's 41 say it for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was is that I got him involved. We had an adult bar mitzvah. And he's starting to come to our house one Shabbat a month, and he's getting involved, comes Sunday morning, goes on to go in and so on and so forth. And mentally retarded, he was denied the project as a child because he just couldn't hack it.
Right.
But the point is, as an adult, he's gravitated towards what I'm doing.
So his personality is starting to come out, and you're...
And the elder people in the congregation are delighted at the fact that you're doing something else other than providing for their needs.
That's wonderful. Yeah, so everybody gets...
finding someone who is unfortunate, but...
Right. What do you like about this person?
He has a neshama. He's reaching out for Yiddishkeit. He's not shomer, called shomer mitzvah, but the fact that when I'm filling, the fact that he'll try to pray in his own way, the fact that he'll get called to the Torah, we have to read the bracha for him, occasionally rejoices.
Yeah.
Shouldn't rejoice.
Okay. Somebody else that knows about a disabled person. Since you know I'm going to call on you, put your hands down. Did you have your hand up?
Well, I work at a geriatric facility. He had to focus on younger people who are, because they can't really function on their own and are legally going to, you know, generally as a senior citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one man, I mean, a young man, he's 55 years old, but like 30 years, you know, 20 years younger than everybody else, who was manic depressive, brittle diabetic.
What do you appreciate about this person? I mean, what do you connect up, and what do you like about this person?
He really wants to help other people.
Yeah.
He really wants to be appreciated.
Right. See, every one of you, when you began to talk about it, first talked about the disability. They're this, they're that, they're manic depressive, they're retarded, they're autistic. But then when you think about it, you start to think about like who that person really is and that part that you connect up to them. And that's the point about inclusion, is that initially these people who we look at the outside, and we have names for them. We call them stupid. We call them retarded. We call them idiots. We call them clumsy. That's our initial reaction, because, you know, even as educators, hopefully. But still, that first part comes out, and then you get behind. Or they may be scary to you in some ways because they are so different. What I'd like to do is, this may be strange to you, but so what? Shirley, would you help me here? I want everybody to take a piece of sandpaper. Yeah, I will. Yeah.
You want to see
a connection? Yeah.
Okay.
Here. You should be part of this. What I want you to do is when you get your piece of sandpaper is to roll it up and put it in a place that would feel uncomfortable to you, but not embarrassing to anybody here. Okay, so for guys, it's usually down the neck. But make it, I want you to feel it. So roll it up so that the rough side is out. So put it someplace where you're aware that they have a feel for it. You put it up your sleeve, you know. Okay. Okay, and as you do that, we have another thing here. I'd like you to read this. If you happen to know this, don't put your hand up. But I want you to take some time. I want you to read this, and I want you to tell me what it means. What is this about? Any sense at all? An idea? Just put your hand up. Be brave. Take a guess. Yeah. Who has an idea about what this is about? Oh, guy, what do you think?
It's a perfect world.
It's a perfect world. Okay. Mark?
The philosopher.
Good. Keep on going. Anybody else? Yeah.
And through simplicity, less frightening.
Oh, do you see that? All the philosophical stuff starts to evaporate, and all of a sudden you're on the beach with a kite. Okay? Now, a kid with attention deficit disorder may... or a kid with, autism or Asperger's syndrome, the teacher may be talking, and all of a sudden they're very curious about the lights, or they start to hear the humming of the air conditioning system in this building, or a plane goes by if you're in the five towns, and all of a sudden they miss that beginning sentence, and the teacher gives them this as their assignment, and then they have to make sense of it, and the teacher starts asking questions and stuff. And a student will say, well, it's about the simplicity of life, or it's about challenges. And that teacher is going to do what to that kid? What are they going to say to them?
Pay attention.
Why would you pay attention? Where's your thought? Did you get it? You know? So that student that raised their hand, how are they going to start to feel the next time on the next go around? What are they going to do? They're going to start to feel stupid. Okay. And imagine this multiplied day after day after day. Okay, and where your self-esteem really starts to plummet, you stop taking chances, you don't trust your mind, okay? Those kinds of things happen to kids. You know, when we're talking about disabled kids, there are a lot of kids in yeshivas functioning day after day, long hours in school that may have this disability. They may not have been picked up or that they're just suffering in a sense in these environments. We've met a lot of those kids, and the more extreme ones have been asked to leave. Okay. What I want you to do is take your paper. Everybody raise your dominant hand, your right hand, and raise it. Okay. I want you to not use that hand at all, and I want you to follow these directions. I want you to use your left hand and whatever part of your body, be creative. I want you to make a paper airplane out of this. Okay? So, you gotta be...
With two hands, I have difficulty.
I'm using two hands, okay? You can put your hands down, okay? But just don't use it. Okay, so first you're gonna fold it. Mark is off on the run here, okay? Fold it now, you don't know how. Then you're gonna take it, fold it over. Okay. Or you're making the Concorde, what? Yeah, okay.
It's not American Airlines.
No, it's not American Airlines, no. Okay. Then you're going to... Now, you guys are attention deficit disorder because you're not following directions here. You're jumping ahead here. Okay. Now what you're going to do is fold it in. Okay, because you've got to make it a super plane here. Okay? You're going to fold it again.
Wait, which way
do you
fold?
You
don't know how to make airplanes.
Well, but you know what? If you were in school, your plane would have to look like mine because that's the way a lot of schools are, right? Okay? So you got that folded. And then you're going to fold over the wings. You hear a lot of paper crumbling. Okay, and essentially you're going to wind up with something like this. Okay? Okay, now, let's see. Julie, you got something.
Okay.
All right. Well, won't make it in the Bronx. Okay. Here we have a different
the Concorde.
Okay, this is for Jersey.
This plane goes nowhere.
Crashed in Jersey. This plane is on the way. How many of you
can
keep on using your hands?
Good.
Did anybody use any other part of their body? Anybody? I didn't see any mouth being used. Use your mouth. Good. Okay, so you started. Okay, so you used your mouth. Okay, kids that adapt will start to use other parts of their body. We have a girl in one of our groups who has no use of her arms. So when snack time comes out and we have to give her something, she just puts her face down and eats it, okay? But she's eating just like everybody else, but it doesn't look like that. And at first you're going, oh my gosh, you know, you're not supposed to be taught to eat like that. But she's taking sustenance in. How hard was this for you to do, using your non-dominant hand?
Well, it wasn't
easy. Wasn't easy. How good did you feel about making that plane, though, as best you could? Did you feel somewhat accomplished?
Frustrated.
Okay. Frustrated, but look, you know, maybe you felt good enough, okay? Because that's the experience that kids with disabilities feel. They try every day the hardest they can to do the best they can. Just like you, just like your kids, just like your family, just like your congregate members. They are trying to do the best they can. But their planes may look like this, but they did the best they could, you know? And there's nothing wrong with that, unless I start comparing this. Saying, what's the matter with you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's where the problem comes in. Okay? But if they're rewarded and saying, that's a good job, you did the best you could, okay, and I'm going to show you another way, well, then maybe they'll get it. The reason for the sandpaper has to do with a lot of kids are sensory. You can take it out now. A lot of kids are sensory, avoidant or, you know,
they become easily overstimulated.
Yeah, they either become overly stimulated. A shirt, a collar, like one of those tags you have in your shirt, a kid with autism, that could absolutely drive them crazy. And they may not have the language to say that that's what's driving them crazy, but all of a sudden they'll have a huge meltdown. Or the sound may drive them nuts. You know, they become sensory overloaded, and they really have a very difficult time. So, I mean, they even say these kinds of lights are not good for kids with autism. So there's a lot of issues that go on.
Fluorescent.
Yeah, it has to do with where, because they're
moving.
Too late. Okay, all right. Just quickly, I just want to say that a lot of these programs that we talk about are not expensive. But in terms of building a program, what you really need to do is first locate the families, and the way to locate the families are to find one family that's willing to talk, because they are willing to identify all the other families. That's the first thing. The other thing is, in terms of leadership, at least for Kulano, and I think a lot of these programs that I notice, it's your Balabatum that really provide the leadership. To ask parents of kids with disabilities to really, you know, go in the forefront and to speak to your congregate members about that, to raise their sensitivity about it, to actually run the groups, to organize the groups. It's a very exhausting thing. These people are exhausted. These people are upset. These people are embarrassed to go out and have to ask their friends for help. Okay, but if you have a member of your congregation that has some empathy for these people, they can provide excellent leadership. In almost every one of our programs, it has been various congregant members who don't have kids with disabilities who have a sense and an empathy for these people who are willing to take the forefront. So the Shabbos Shadow Program is run by a stockbroker. The Sunday Activities Program was started by somebody who's a lawyer. And they got their friends involved. They're able to ask for help. They're able to say, come on, you know, come with me on Sunday and be part of this program. A lot of the programs were gone over by Mark and Shuli. One of the things I'd like you to think about, though, is that in terms of referrals, when you're sitting across a family member and talking to them and they're asking you for parental advice, or, you know, what should I do with my son, be very careful to listen and see whether, in fact, there might be some, you know, disability that they're really talking about. And that it might not be just an issue of a kid that's oppositional, defiant, or lazy, but it might be a child that really has some kind of disability that you want to begin to address. And you want to refer them out. I mean, there are plenty of professionals out there that can give people good advice. In the back, or on this table, is a Board of Jewish Education resource manual. There's a sign up there. In that book is everything you need. Camp referrals, programming, mental health agencies, service agencies, it's all there. Just put your name down, I'll send it to the BJE, and you'll get copies of that book. It's an incredible referral. You yourselves don't have to be the encyclopedias for all this information. I know I can't be. Again, these programs are very simple and easy to start. They don't cost a lot. A lot of them could be run just by the basis of volunteerism. You have to have leadership, though, within your groups to do this. The other thing I just want to say is a phenomenon that I can only call sort of mitzvah mania, that the community, the whole community, has really caught fire about this program that we're doing. And, I mean, I just got a phone call from a person at a yeshiva, a high school girl, and she picked up on the fact that January 1st, everybody's in school. And what she came up with was a program is called Special Fun on the One. So her high school is going to be inviting all of our Kulanu kids into her high school. The high school kids are going to be volunteering, and they're going to have an activities program that day. Just called up, you know. I have another boy who gave us $700 from his bar mitzvah money, but he came up with a program on his own called Dare to Care, where he starts collecting games and presents for kids. This came from this kid. I mean, this is coming out of the woodwork. A lot of the kids are calling up now wanting chesed hours with our program. That provides the manpower for these programs. Kids are now spontaneously beginning to invite other children for play dates. That is so important. These kids do not have friends. You can come up with as many programs as you want, and they may be, but they're still contrived because they lack that kind of spontaneity about somebody saying, come over. I had a parent call up and say, look, I'm having a birthday party. Won't you invite some of the kids over, you know, to the birthday party that we have as Kulanu kids? I just want to say also, as a person, as a congregant member, Avi Weiss isn't here, but one of the most important things I saw was the tone that the rabbi sets with the congregation about this. When I used to live in Riverdale, I'd gone to Avi Weiss's shul, and it was at that point just a cavernous, unfinished building. There were plenty of people in his congregation that could have been incredible donors. They had money. And you know who Avi Weiss always sat next to? He came in, and he sat in the back next to a very impoverished man with a child that had an adult child that had disabilities, and he'd put his arm around that man and his son, and he would sit there, and that's where he'd spend a good part of his Shabbos morning davening with that person, and that made an incredible impression on me that he would do that, and not, you know, rub shoulders with the people that could help him finish his synagogue, but he chose to be with somebody who he had an incredible empathy with. And I'm just saying that made an impression. And you can make the same impression, because the tone that you set in your congregations, people will follow. That's all I have to say. Take care.